everybody. Welcome to yet another episode of Let's Weekend. This one is for August 19th, 2016. I am, of course, as always, of your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. And joining me tonight is Filippo D'Onofrio and Chris Logie.
Hello.
Hey, everybody. Yeah, so we got some stuff we got to be talking about today. We'll be talking about a certain movie that I went and saw. Look, I know what you're thinking. It's Sausage Party. I'm just going to go ahead and say it. It's Sausage Party. I know what you're thinking, but bear with me because that movie is far better than it has any right to be.
All right.
And I'll explain why. We'll also be, well, of course, some small political stuff, talking about the PSN flash sale, and some other things. And we'll get to them when we're ready. But first of all, Phil, what have you been up to?
So I finished the first book of the Stormlight Archive, The Way of Kings.
Yeah.
And moved straight into the second one.
Yeah, that's generally not a good idea.
So
you should at least give yourself a couple days first.
Yeah, no, I couldn't. I gave myself 15 minutes. That was straight. Yeah. So I've been into that. I've also been, of course, packing because I'm moving soon. So finding out that I have way more stuff than I thought I did. Yeah. So that's kind of fun. So to break up that the whole packing and Stormlight Archive thing, I've been watching Mythbusters here and there, and trying to get caught up on Mr. Robot, but I'm still a little behind. So get moving on that. I'll probably save those for the. When I get into the new apartment, because I'm probably going to have about 2-3 days where I have no internet, so have something to do there.
Yeah. So are you doing all the packing by yourself, or have you got help?
At the moment, I'm doing it all by myself, but got my sister and my mom going to be coming over in the next few days to help me out a bit.
All right.
So hopefully I'll be help make things go a bit quicker.
Yeah. Well, we all know from Lee, moving sucks.
Yes, moving sucks balls, but it's great when it's finally done, though. That's the nice thing.
Yeah.
You're in a different place, and all your stuff is still here in boxes, and usually stays there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've also been, I think last week I talked about Vapor Trails by Rush, good album that sounds like crap.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I got the remixed version of that. And yes, it sounds much, much better. It's like actually listenable now.
Yeah.
Which is good because the songs are actually good. So I've been listening to that while I've been putting stuff in boxes.
Now, is this a completely original album, or is this related to Clockwork Angels?
It came out after Clockwork Angels, but it's actually the same album as that they released in 2002. They just went back to the studio and remastered it.
Remixed it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, a couple of the songs
don't know,
have been.
For those, cut you off real quick. For those who don't know, Clockwork Angels is Rush's first full concept album.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually really good.
Yes,
apparently.
Yes, I've got it on CD and thinking about getting it on vinyl. But
and they also Neil Peart teamed up with Kevin J. Anderson, and they wrote a novel to go along with it, which is apparently not bad.
Hmm.
I've been told.
I'll have to look into that.
There's actually a sequel as well.
Hmm. I like Kevin J. Anderson, so
yeah,
it'd be pretty good.
It's like I said, it's their first full concept album. Now they've come close in the past.
Yeah,
but the only other example was only one half of the album. So.
Yeah, that was 2112. So. Yeah, so I'm enjoying that. What else did I get? Got the original, the first Rush album. Been listening to that as well. Kind of a different style between that and Clockwork Angels.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is more traditional rock. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. I'm gonna take a wild guess. You've got a copy of Moving Pictures on vinyl?
Not yet.
All right.
2112 is coming soon.
And, yeah.
Well, probably once I get settled in, I'll try to track down a copy of Moving Pictures.
Yeah. When people think of Rush, that's usually the album everyone immediately picks up on.
Yeah.
Because it's basically a greatest hits album all by itself.
It is. There's absolutely no bad songs on that album. Even the B-sides are really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
And, no, that's been my week. What about you?
What about you, Chris?
So I checked out the new Tick Show.
There's a new Tick Show?
Yeah, Amazon's producing it. They put out the pilot. And it's weird.
Well, I would hope it would be.
I really like the original live-action show.
Hmm.
Which I think if that show was released today, that show would do really well.
Probably.
It was on like Netflix or Amazon because it's just that sort of weirdness that would excel on those sorts of services. But this one's a little bit more serious, not as slapstick, at least just in this pilot. Basically, it features Arthur as this sort of, I guess, kind of nerdy adult who you find out in the flashback that he was there when the terror killed a bunch of heroes in the city. And then terror just walked right over to him. I guess in the process his dad was killed because he was getting him ice cream. And then the terror just kind of slurps the ice cream and then leaves. That sort of like scarred him, just the encounter with the terror.
Mm-hmm.
Which I guess is played by Jackie Earle Haley, which he had no way of knowing that, just the way they do his makeup and costume and all that.
Mm.
And so the terror was supposedly killed by the world's first superhero.
Mm.
I forget what the superhero's name is. It's not really important. But there's a conspiracy that the terror survived, sort of slowly gaining power underground.
Yeah.
So Arthur supposedly figured out a bunch of clues to solve the mystery or get close. Decides to go confront, at least explore the area that he thinks is where this is all going down, and runs into the Tick. This weird dude in the suit. The suit's real weird. It doesn't look anything like the
original
the one from the live action show.
Yeah.
Let's see if I can pull up. Okay, I think this one's a good one. Then the chat for you guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
That looks weird.
Yeah, it's definitely a bit more.
I kind of like the more simplistic one that.
The one that looks like the dude just made it out of a tarp.
Yeah.
Yeah. Arthur's suit's a little bit more high tech and complicated. He has like this weird. Like the goggles kind of. I guess kind of transform onto his eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Like it comes up. From the size of the suit over his eyes. Like his wings are kind of more high tech. It's not like the weird look that the Arthur in the other live action show had, where it was like a guy in a spandex with weird wings that popped out of his back. It was like backpack or whatever. Yeah, there's maybe something there. If they capitalize on it. The new Tick has a pretty good voice. It's not as ridiculous as I keep forgetting who was the original Tick on the show. Patrick Warburton.
Okay.
That guy sold Ridiculous Lunatic real well.
Yeah.
Obviously had the physique for the suit. The new guy is Peter Serafinowicz, which I believe he was in the original, the internet's being stupid today. He's very much a Simon Pegg actor.
Okay.
He's been in shows and movies with him. So he's an English actor.
Yeah.
But pulls off the sort of deep superhero voice pretty well. And a little bit of action they have with him in the show is pretty good. Where he's kind of bulletproof, real strong, and just sort of bowls through these bad guys that are just shooting at him. Just smacks him out of the way with little quips and all that sort of stuff. It's pretty good. Interesting seeing how it progresses once they do a full production on the rest of the season, assuming that's what they're doing.
Yeah. Is this, do you need a Prime membership to watch this, or is this open to anybody?
I think you need Prime. Yeah, you need Prime.
Well, it doesn't matter to me anyway, because I'm in Canada and can't watch any of that stuff anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, this is all part of Amazon's pilot season, which is the whole thing where they put up a bunch of stuff and people say what they like.
Yeah.
I guess they got a show called I Love Dick. Stars Kevin Bacon and Catherine Hahn. And a Jean-Claude Van Damme show. Jean-Claude Van Johnson.
Oh, boy.
Okay, so those are interesting initial group. For other things, I've been watching some Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Which one? Which, is it the old British ones?
It's the new stuff.
Oh, the
new season and a little bit of the 11th season on CW's website.
Gotcha.
Some real good stuff there. Those guys have obviously been doing that work for 10 plus years at this point. 20 years, maybe.
Oh, Ryan Stiles and Colin Mochrie have been doing it at least since the early 90s. So,
yeah.
I mean, Ryan Stiles was on that show when it was still in being made in London. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I was particularly watching an episode with Kathy Lee Gifford, and she goes, she goes for it.
Oh, yeah.
And kind of slutty. Penn and Teller, because they have pretty much a guest in almost every single episode.
Yeah.
One weird one was Willie Robertson from Duck Dynasty. Knowing about their political leanings just made that kind of like weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, lots of good stuff. Definitely, if you are into that, they have all of the American seasons on there, on their site, which is great for just putting it on when you've got nothing else to listen to and just enjoying the hell out of it.
Yeah.
And there's like a good little stretch where Wayne Brady sort of suggests that I forget what her name is, the host, the new host.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. I just I can't remember
like
the
suggesting
name.
She's a man. That she just tapes it to her leg. Sort of does like a whole segment of what somebody does in their off time. So it's him going through this whole sequence of getting undressed, and then gets a visitor and then has to put all her stuff back on. He's like, that's pretty funny stuff.
Yeah.
As for games, still playing No Man's Sky. I managed to find a good dick planet. let's see if I got it.
Have to take my dick ship to dick planet.
This planet was a really good planet because there was this element I could constantly find called Murine, which is named after Sean Murray. And it's a rare element, so I mined a ton of it and sold it. Got a lot of money, and also a bunch of drop pods on this planet. So I upgraded my inventory quite a bit. I think I have 30 slots at this point. So I think the max is 48. But still enjoying playing it. Trying to spend a little less time on each planet. Just not tiring myself out on the planets on each one. Just trying to do everything when it's kind of the big point is to just keep moving.
Yeah.
I did find a good planet here called Umansky. It's just the name that
somebody gave
it had. No, it was just the generated name, so mm-hmm. I'm the chosen one. I'm the Mansky. Yeah, looking forward to playing more of that. They put out a big update on PC and PS4. No change log yet, but PS4, it seems to run a lot better, run a lot smoother. So that's good. I've been doing a little bit more combat, ship combat.
Hmm.
I've been launching out of planets since, like, oh, pilots see you have valuable cargo, and then they come attacking. And not really a huge fan of it. It just doesn't feel like you have great enough mobility with the ship.
Yeah.
To be able to sort of flip around and track these ships. You kind of have to do a lot of braking to allow you to turn around faster. And then it just doesn't feel as good as it probably should. So I'm hoping they make some tweaks to that in the upcoming updates they're working on.
Yeah.
For other games, I've been playing Adventure Capitalist on the PS4, which is a clicker game.
Mm-hmm. On the
PS4. It's a real weird thing that they put that game on the PS4.
Just mash the X button as fast as you can.
This game has a little bit less clicking than others. Typically, you just kind of tap it. It's set up pretty well for the controls, so that basically hit square to tap, and X buys upgrades for that particular item.
Okay.
So you get more money from that. Because every click you do, it sort of processes it.
Yeah.
So initially it'll take like a couple seconds.
Mm.
Then you get enough to buy like the second item, and that'll take maybe twice as long, and so on. Then you eventually earn enough to buy a manager, which will just do that automatically for you. Then you just let that, pretty much from there on, you don't have to click anymore, just let that go to build up and spend that money on upgrades for the other stuff. More managers and things like that. And it's interesting, that game is already broken for the leaderboards. The developer didn't account for people's ability to change the clock. So immediately started seeing people with ridiculous amounts of money on day one. Where, like, if they're playing it legit, they would not have this stuff.
Yeah.
Like, there are numbers that I'm seeing on this leaderboard that I haven't seen in the year and a half for 2 years I've been playing on PC. So, yeah. And amazingly, they have microtransactions and stuff, as you could expect. And that's more for getting, like, permanent boosters and temporary stuff for increasing your profits.
Mm-hmm.
So they essentially let people completely bypass that. So they just kind of remove people's need to actually pay for anything. So that's a real smart move on the developer's part.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's neat that this is on console.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to see more people bring their clickers over. Just for the absurdity of this thing, I can start up for like 5 minutes, like once or twice a day.
Well, it would be a pretty good way of using the touchpad, at least.
I doesn't really use that at all. It's just.
But I mean, if somebody was going to bring over a clicker game, that would.
There's one on Steam. It's called Time Clickers, which is more of a. The kind of main control there is kind of first-person shootery. A little bit where you're just kind of shooting at these blocks that pop up on the screen.
Yeah.
To get your money, then you can pay so it auto-shoots for you.
Yeah.
That's sort of how all the clickers goes. Just you click enough until you can just let it go on its own.
Yeah. The game will play itself.
Yeah. And you just watch the numbers go up. That's the whole thing. Yeah, so that's pretty good. It's free, obviously. They got trophies on there. It's like a really small list. It's not like a platinum or anything like that. Anywhere close to what's on Steam or on the phones. Which is a shame. I have told the developers that on Twitter. So see if they add more later on. And the other game I'm playing is Laser Disco Defenders. This was released on the Vita a few weeks ago. And for them delaying it for like another week or two, I think for probably some of the same issues we mentioned on Days or Updates last week, where sort of bureaucracy issues, sort of with the paperwork and such, the final stretches. And for that, they put the game a half off on launch week. I was like, well, that's pretty good. Discount for something that doesn't really affect anybody, any of the players, really.
Yeah.
It's not like you couldn't wait another week or week or so for that.
Yeah.
So initially I thought this was like a Metroid style game. That's the way the description seemed to make it, but it's more of a roguelite. Basically you play as one of these 70s sci-fi themed characters, sort of trying to you're like part of a kind of a Star Trek kind of force exploring the galaxy. They get to this I forget what the rest of it really is, but you're kind of shooting your way through these levels, trying to take out all the mines and enemies and turrets that are in them. And the one caveat is each shot you take ricochets off the walls in infinitely. So if you just sit there and keep spamming it, there's just going to be all these lasers, laser bullets just flying around. So there's part of it is taking good good precise shots as well as dodging. And this being on the Vita, there's a little bit of a problem with the controls. So you can move around with your, you just have like a jetpack, so you just fly around with the left stick, right stick you aim, and the right shoulder button is your shot. Problem is, while you're trying to be precise in aiming and pressing the shoulder button, you, what has been affecting me is that it moves my aim just a little bit. So I essentially miss most of the time. It's like a thing, unless I'm like resting my hands or the on the like a table or something to steady it, I'm missing a lot of shots. It's like shooting higher than I actually want. So the story mode, you kind of have to get through like 10 levels, I think, which isn't too hard. But once you start getting far enough, it's just they drop in enemies. Like there's a kind of like a laser bomb that you shoot off the walls, and that drops, it sort of shoots like 6 or 7 lasers out from it. Those can also take out enemies and eventually get to a point where you just got so many enemies and the levels start getting bigger that it gets pretty hard just towards the end. I've gotten to at least some sort of close to the end point. They don't really describe it too well in the progression. You just kind of see like a your spot on the bar kind of move a little bit towards this like checkered flag, like final level. I get to the final level and it's just craziness. Because the setting is completely different than the sort of cave style levels that I was in initially. So this is something I really want to play on PlayStation TV, or maybe just wait until it comes out on PS4. And it'll be cross by, so I'll be able to play it with a better controller.
Yeah.
And, yeah, looking forward to playing some more of that and trying to see if I can actually beat it once. Because it seems like one of those games, each of the crew members is a different difficulty.
Okay.
So I've been playing on the easiest difficulty. And like each one gets progressively, they get less health, but more, I don't know if it's less health. I think it's maybe more, I'm trying to see. No, it is more, less health, more speed. So they get a little bit harder to control, but they're faster.
Yeah.
It gives you like little mobile style, like quests, like, take out 10 of these enemies or reach this score or get this sort of multiplier. And it'll unlock special items that you can get. Be like, oh, you can take an extra hit, or you get more points, or I can do sort of a smaller laser shots, or maybe like a more precise aim.
Yeah,
but it will tell me like longer distance where I'm shooting, where I'm aiming at, things like that. So yeah, it's pretty good. But that's pretty much it for me this week. How about you, Brandon?
All right. Well, first and foremost, I am just about done with Tales of Zestiria. Last I left off, I am on the final boss.
Yeah,
that game really lays on the feels towards the end. Yeah, pretty much everything you thought was a lie. Like I said, that's sort of how these Tales games work.
Yeah.
Real good use of your time, as far as story is concerned.
Yeah.
And it gets harder, too, as it goes along. So, fortunately, it's not one of those games that you really have to do a whole lot of grinding on.
No.
It does a pretty good job of maintaining sort of the proper level of stats that you need.
Yeah.
Towards the game. Yeah, it's pretty, I really do recommend it. It was a lot of fun.
You think you'll finish it by Sunday?
Probably. Like I said, I'm on the last boss. This is the last guy.
Yeah.
I actually went online and confirmed this is the last guy that you're fighting. He just goes through a couple of phases because
JRPGs.
Because JRPGs, right. So I did that. I also went and put down earlier today, I went to GameStop and put down my pre-order for Tales of Berseria, which for those of you who don't know, that's the next Tales game that's coming out, and it's not coming out until next year.
Yeah.
Early, they just like that year. That rhyming scheme, don't they?
They really do.
They had Vesteria and Zestiria and Berseria.
Well, it was Vesperia, actually.
Vesperia, whatever. It's,
and actually, so I went there. The thing with Berseria is that it's actually a prequel to Zestiria. So,
of course,
it takes place a couple of centuries before this.
B before C.
Yeah. And I also went and put down my pre-order for The Last Guardian because I forgot that comes out next. That comes out later
two
October.
Months.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like I still can't believe that game's actually coming out. So
yeah.
It's coming out before Final Fantasy 15.
Yeah.
What a sad state that is.
We know more about Final Fantasy 15, but it's coming out later.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and I also, because I was there and because it was on sale, I went and got Tales of Exilia as well. Because
why not?
Yeah. That one actually got a sequel, which should tell you how popular that
was. They just called Exilia 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They didn't just go, Vilia.
No, it's...
Yep, Exilia 2.
Yeah.
Make this one easy.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I got that. I've started listening to more J-rock and J-pop again. I've been really listening to this old school Japanese hard rock heavy metal band called Bow Wow. Except during the mid 80s when they were called Vow Wow, because as you don't know, there was a band also called Bow Wow that had a pretty big hit in the early 80s called I Want Candy.
Yeah.
So they, for a while, they had, for copyright reasons, well,
change her name.
Yeah. They also got a completely new singer as well, who could sing in English.
Yeah.
Because up to that point, it was one of their guitar players and their, who was the lead vocalist up to that point. It's really good. Both the Bow Wow and Vow Wow versions are very good, solid hard rock. So, yeah. Oh, it is late.
Yeah.
So I've also been listening to this group called Flaming June. As you don't know who Flaming June is, it is a studio project slash record label founded by June Maida. If you don't know who June Maida is, up until recently, he was one of the primary scenario and music guys for key visual work, visual arts. So, Canon, Air, Clannad, Angel Beats. If you've enjoyed one of those, then you've enjoyed his work.
Yeah.
He is basically the man that has basically torn out your heart over and over and over again for several titles now.
Damn that guy.
Yeah. Except for Clannad, because that ending is bullshit. but, yeah, so he basically went, because he recently retired as the primary scenario guy. He still does a lot of the music for them. Partly probably because of his heart condition.
Yeah.
Yeah, those of you don't know, June Maida, earlier this year, he announced that he is in need of a heart transplant, which is tragically ironic. But, so, for now, he's sort of receded to his music projects, and basically what Flaming June is it's kind of his version of the Alan Parsons Project.
Yeah.
Where he's the primary songwriter and producer, and he released an album that is basically a sort of J-pop concept album based around more or less the type of themes you would expect from the main guy at Key Visual Arts.
Yeah.
So, you know, just tragedy, all is darkness.
Yeah. Weep. Sadness, depressing.
Weep for, you know, everything abandon sucks. All hope, ye who enter here. That type of thing.
Yeah. It's like Joe Abercrombie in music form.
Yeah, but it's actually really solid J-pop, too. Yeah. He got the lead singer, well, now I say lead singer, the primary vocalist for, who is the primary vocalist now for Supercell, after they decided to stop using Vocaloids.
Yeah.
So if you've heard the theme for Guilty Crown, then you've heard her. Okay. And it's really good stuff. Speaking of Key Visual Arts, I started recently playing, quote-unquote, playing Planetarian, which, those of you who don't know, this is, like, considered to be up there as far as visual novels go as being among the best. And being a Key Visual Arts title, it is, of course, extremely depressing. It's basically about a society where far off in the future, where it's mostly inhabited by robots because most humans have died out, and there's this one particular cute robot girl who whose primary function is to maintain this planetarium in this sort of post-apocalyptic future, and she has been doing that for nigh on a few centuries now. It's kind of like WALL-E. Only
more depressing.
Far, far, far more depressing. And you yourself actually play one of the handful of humans that actually still exist.
Yeah.
So I'm playing that. I got back into Higurashi When They Cry as well. Because I still haven't finished that thing. That thing is long. It's good. Don't get me wrong. It's good and it's gripping, but it is long.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I'm not even done with the first arc yet, because there's actually like two arcs in the series, with like each of them have like five seasons.
Yeah.
What they call the question arc and the answer arc. They actually did the same thing with the anime as well.
Okay.
Where it's basically you see a bunch of weird, terrifying shit for the question arc, and then the answer arc, they show you again the really disturbing shit, but they show you what's actually going on behind the scenes, which actually manages to be twice as disturbing and terrifying as the original. Let's see, there was that. You know, the reason I'm getting back to Higurashi is because, 07th Expansion, you know, the guys who were behind the Higurashi series.
Right.
Well, the When They Cry franchise in general, as well as some other stuff. They've got their newest title, Tri-Anthology, which is coming out later on this month. I think around the 30th.
Yeah.
And so I'm getting ready for that.
Okay.
Because I still haven't finished Rose Gun Days either, which was their most recent title. I'm not sure if I've talked. I think I've talked about that one previously.
Yeah, you did.
I'm in it for the long haul, because these guys, Ryukishi 07 has really quickly become one of my favorite writers of all time. He's just that damn good. He's really good at the basic sort of, as somebody described me, is that the way that sort of the Higurashi series works is it takes the formula of the key visual arts games, you know, where it's like, you know, it's like, oh, it's so happy and glowy and beautiful, and you meet all these charming characters and go through their day-to-day, and it's just so sickeningly fun and happy, and then, oh, shit, somebody dies.
Yeah.
And then it's just sadness and depression and, oh, God, you just ripped my heart out.
Yeah.
Which, if you've ever enjoyed Clannad, you know, despite that bullshit ending, that's kind of how it goes.
Yeah.
Only difference is that with 07th Expansion, they take that and then they just try to just pump you as full of nightmare fuel as they possibly can. Yeah. But, yeah, so I did that. Oh, and then a friend of mine sent me the original PC game version of Bible Black. And I was like, oh, this could be fun. Saved. Yeah, for those of you who don't know, Bible Black is a infamous hentai anime that originally started as a Euro gay visual novel.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, sure, why not? Give it a shot. Funny enough, that's kind of how a lot of these, like, it's not often talked that enough that the key visual arts games are technically also erotic visual novels themselves. It's just that they focus more on the plot than the porn stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's basically what I've been up to. And that's about it, I think.
Yeah.
All right. Anybody got anything else they want to, they want to bring up anything?
No, I'm saving myself for later.
Saving himself for marriage. Ain't that cute?
Okay.
All right. But, yeah, all right then. So, I guess then, once again, it's time for another episode of Brandon's Random Factoid. And, you know what? This time I thought, because, you know, video games are basically our wheelhouse, I thought we would just sort of take a little journey back to the beginning of video games. Now, when people usually talk about what is considered the first quote-unquote video game, as we consider it by modern standards, what is the title that usually comes up?
Well, most people will probably say Pong, but they're wrong.
Yes, they are extremely wrong. In fact, Pong isn't even an original. It's a rip-off of the fucking Odyssey.
Tennis for Two.
Tennis for Two.
Yeah. Tennis for Two is usually... Well, and usually, here's the thing. There's actually two particular titles when people talk about the history of modern video games, and it usually is what you consider a proper screen. Do you consider a proper screen as like a flat, you know, flat surface through which light goes through to create an image? Or could a screen be considered a series of, fixing to say, series of tubes?
Yeah, well, that's kind of what they were.
Specifically, a series of flat series of vacuum tubes.
Yeah.
Specifically, what are they called? They're
yeah, they were vacuum tubes or Nixie tubes.
Yeah, there's a proper name for them though. Hold on, I gotta go back to Wikipedia because
what screen they used.
It was cathode ray tubes. That's what I'm talking about.
Old CRTs.
Yeah, the old CRTs. If you remember seeing old school sci-fi movies, when you saw old school computers, the ones that, you know, used to take up an entire room to function.
Yeah.
You usually, if there was a screen, it was usually made up of those.
Yeah.
It was basically like a giant version of a light, right? Literally. That's what.
Yeah, just a bunch of lights.
And so, if you are going to go with that, then in fact, the first video game as we know it today would be considered Birdie the Brain. Birdie the Brain was very extremely simple. It was basically a AI controlled tic-tac-toe, or if you're British, knots and crosses game. It was built in Toronto by Joseph Cates for the 1950 Canadian National Exhibition. So, yes, you can blame the Canadians for this one. So, basically, here's how the story goes. Back in 1950, Canada was having their Canadian National Exhibition. So, Dr. Joseph Cates, who was at the time, who was a Canadian engineer, he was asked to provide something on the future of computer technology, because this was the 50s and everybody was really into
the future.
Yeah, the future that really, and it wasn't just the future, it was that particular, what we call retro-futuristic aesthetic.
Yeah.
And so everybody wanted to come up with a sort of something that could show that. At this point, the closest thing to an electronic game that we could sort of consider up to this point was there was a couple things. There was like an old chess program simulation that was developed by Alan Turing and his friend and his collaborator David Chaperon called Turachamp. That was made in 1948, but it was never actually implemented onto a computer.
Okay.
Other than that, we also have a thing that was built right around the same time. Well, it was developed and sort of mapped out, but it was never properly built. Was a thing called the hold on, I gotta find this out again. It was called the cathode ray tube amusement device. And this thing was actually made, this thing was developed and had a patent filed for it in 1947. Basically what this was is it was a device that would simulate an artillery shell arcing towards a target on a cathode ray tube screen. And it would be controlled by the player using a series of knobs to adjust the trajectory of the quote-unquote beam spot on the display and in order to reach the target that was overlaid on the screen. But like I said, this one was never actually built. It was developed, it was mapped out, made into a patent, but no one ever actually built the thing. So the closest we have to the earliest quote-unquote video game, or at least what we would consider such, is, of course, Birdie the Brain, which now The only – now, when people usually think of – if you get to the point where you've got to use, like, an actual something close to a video screen instead of a cathode ray tube screen, which, like we said, was basically a big, giant sort of – well, we've all –
it's an array. It's basically just an array of bulbs. Light bulbs.
Yeah, basically.
Boils down.
Then you would specifically be talking about Tennis for Two. And Tennis for Two was a – well, it was basically exactly what it sounds like. It was a very simple tennis game that was played on a
– so it was played on the screen of an oscilloscope.
Which, for those who don't know what an oscilloscope is, that's basically your old-fashioned radar screens, basically. First of all, the first thing you need to be realized, it wasn't made for commercial consumption. It was a display using an analog computer by a Mr. William Higginbotham at the Brookhaven National Laboratory. And basically, it was a sort of meant to be as a display, an interactive display for a public exhibition. Sort of as to people who were there for the display. So at this point, it would be mostly people like IT people.
Yeah.
Government security.
Scientists.
Basically as an interactive display to show off the capabilities of the hardware.
Yeah.
And that was it. It was put away, and it was never seen again until the late 70s. And how do we know about this? Because he took, he ended up going to court against somebody. Who was that? Ralph H. Baer, the creator of the Odyssey.
Yeah.
Who at the time was working for Magnavox. And of course, that particular Odyssey was, of course, eventually ripped off by... Pretty much everybody, but specifically the developer of Pong... Nolan Bushnell, who, of course, would eventually create the Atari.
Yeah.
And, of course, also create the Chuck E. Cheese.
Yeah.
So, there you go, folks. A little bit of a small early history of video games.
Yeah.
It was basically a long series of, well, intellectual theft, basically.
Yeah. You know what Nolan Bushnell is doing right now?
I'm afraid to ask, but what?
Well, he's kind of done. He's doing an encrypted messaging service.
Yeah. Because we haven't done those before.
No. This one's done by Nolan Bushnell, so there.
No, it's done by Nolan Bushnell. And that is pretty much the one and only selling point to that. So, that has been yet another episode of Brandon's Random Factoid. And that's basically...
That's how we got to where we are.
Yeah. It just shows that crime does pay.
Yeah.
If you think video games are corrupt now, you should go read about when they were literally stealing.
Eat from each other.
Yeah.
Just get their arcade cabinet, just reverse engineer how they made the game.
Literally. I mean, that's literally how Pong was made. It is the Pong arcade machine is a reverse-engineered Odyssey, basically. The only difference being that, unlike the Odyssey, the Odyssey came with little plastic overlay things you put on top of your television to play the various forms of games you could play on it. So, soccer, hockey, stuff like that. All right. So, moving on from there, I guess we got to go real quick talk about our assholes of the week. And no, it is not Trump, believe it or not.
No.
Because, yes, once again, he did give us opportunity, but no.
He's the honorary asshole of the week every week.
Yeah.
Every week, all week, probably from here to eternity.
We don't need to give him a formal award every week.
No.
It's redundant.
Although, for the record, he does show up in our show this week.
Yeah.
Not once, but twice, but only in passing. He's an indirect contributor this time. But specifically, we need to talk about some stuff that went down in Rio. So those who don't know, back down in Brazil, in Rio de Janeiro, the Olympics were going on. And specifically, one of the things that were going on was the American swim team. Hmm. And so if you were watching 24-hour news over the past week or so, you may have heard the story of how a few of the members of the American swim team apparently got mugged in Rio. They apparently got, you know, there was some property damage involved and stuff got stolen, they claimed. And they told this story to the cops and it became this huge damn deal. You know, it was all over the news. You know, it was meant to sort of, it sort of tied into the ongoing sort of, the sort of crime narrative of Rio de Janeiro, which is not completely undeserved. That place does have some serious criminal problems down there, let's not lie.
Yeah.
But that being said, however, as we found out, it was all bullshit.
Yeah,
they made it up. Basically, these dudes had sort of one of those good old-fashioned nights of debauchery that you rarely hear about anymore.
It goes on off in Rio.
Yeah. For the record, there's nothing wrong with a nice night of debauchery, as far as I'm concerned.
No.
But these guys basically acted like the unfortunate stereotype of the asshole American.
Yeah.
Basically had some property damage. You know, they destroyed some shit. And, of course, they didn't want to admit that they had just had a nice drunken night of carousing and busting shit up, and so they made up this robbery story.
Yeah.
And now they're an international embarrassment.
America.
Fuck yeah! God damn it. So, yeah, let's just sort of real quickly kind of go into what was going on. So specifically, the four individuals we're talking about are Ryan Loach, Gunnar Bentz. Of course, one of these motherfuckers was called Gunnar. James Fagan and Jack Conger. Basically, they got drunk. They peed on the Barra de Tijuca gas station in defiance after being told to use the bathroom. Basically, a group of swimmers were asked to use the bathroom at the gas station, but instead allegedly pissed on the wall. There's a mention of an image of one of their asses, though it isn't clear if that's a mental image from one of the attendants or a literal image.
Yeah.
One of them allegedly tore down an advertising board, too. There's even some security footage. Associated Press is reporting that Conger and Bentz have admitted to police that Loach fabricated the story. The so-called gun that they said was brandished at them was actually from a security guard, but he didn't actually brandish it. Brazilian police held a press conference. They claimed there was two women with the group, that Loach was the most quote-unquote rowdy. So basically what they did is these idiots got drunk, went out carousing, you know, acted like assholes, and didn't want to admit it, and then now there's physical evidence of it, eggs all over their face, and they basically ended up causing an international incident.
Yeah.
So, look, it's important to understand when you're in one of these international competitions, when they say that when you're going overseas, you're representing your country, they're not just saying that to be assholes. They're saying that because whether you like it or not, whatever action you take when you're going under the banner of the American flag as an athlete, it's going to reflect on you whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
You know. Fortunately, though, you know, and what I find funny is that anybody who knows the history of the Olympics would know that for whatever, I'm not sure why they decided to actually leave the Olympic Village and actually go outside of the city, because there's plenty of drugs, drink, and debauchery in the Olympic Village to go around.
Yeah.
But... because literally, the Olympic Village in every Olympics is basically a den of debauchery and sin. This is fairly well known. You've got a bunch of well-toned, attractive-looking people all in close vicinity of each other, all nervous, all hyped up, and all with drugs and alcohol within arm's reach.
And a lot of free time.
And a lot of free time. There's going to be some fucking involved.
Yeah.
Just lots and lots of it. So, yeah, fuck those people. But, at the least, we do have our other side of the coin, which is our hero of the week. And this hero of the week is the governor of Louisiana. In this case, it is Governor John Bel Edwards, Democrat. Basically, so anybody who's been paying attention to the news as well will also know that, you know, there's been some flooding of biblical proportions that's been going down through Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Shock among shocks. I know if that sounds kind of crass and insensitive, I apologize, but this is fucking Louisiana. You know, when you build your city below sea level,
don't be too surprised if the water ends up in your backyard.
Yeah.
Like it currently is.
Right now. So for those who don't know, right now, President Obama is currently on vacation. Hillary Clinton is out doing whatever. But guess who has time to come down and announce that he's going to go down and, you know, take a look at the damage? Donald Trump. Now, why is he going down to there? Because, what the fuck am I saying? it's late, people. It's late, and I've been drinking. What can I say? He's saying he's down there because he wants to show he cares, but no, he's really down there for a photo op.
Yeah.
Because he's goddamn Donald Trump.
Yep.
So guess what the governor basically just said he can just rightly fuck off.
Yeah.
Basically, he said, look, Donald Trump hasn't called the governor to inform us of his visit. He's welcome to go to Louisiana, but not for a photo op. He even added that, and by the way, this wasn't directly from the governor. It's from his office.
Yeah.
So he said if he really wants to help out, he could just consider volunteering or, you know what, maybe make a sizable donation from all that money he supposedly has.
Yeah.
Because remember, he's really, really rich.
Apparently.
You know, his income is huge.
Hmm.
About like the size of his penis, which is related to the size of his hands. Which, if you remember, there's no problem when that is concerned. He's got the hugest hands ever.
Yeah.
Of all time. But yeah. Frankly, I'm just happy that somebody told him to fuck off.
Yeah.
Because frankly, we've been coddling this prick too much.
Yeah.
We all know he doesn't have any empathy at all.
Yeah.
No.
For anything.
For anything or anyone.
Hmm. He doesn't even have a normal reaction to the parents of a fallen soldier.
Nope.
Created a huge stir out of the con thing.
Mm-hmm.
As a result.
Yeah.
Remember, folks, Trump is also a synonym for fart.
Yep. Mm-hmm. But by the way, speaking of Trump, so one of Trump's attorneys went on for an interview at CNN. Was it CNN? It was CNN.
I think so.
Pretty sure it was. I want to make sure because I don't want to.
Yeah, CNN.
Yeah, it was CNN. I didn't want to lie. But basically, so right now, Donald Trump has kind of sort of realized that he's fucked up. Believe it or not.
Yeah.
Only now.
Yeah, only
he's just
now.
Just figuring this out.
And that's only if he really intended to actually want to become president in the first place, which I'm really starting to doubt.
Hmm.
Like, I think he's at a point now where he can't really – he thinks he's at a point where he can't really step out without looking like a loser. So he's just sort of going with it. And it also seems like he's intentionally trying to sabotage himself.
I mean, he's even talked about losing.
Yeah. But
that's not what you're supposed to do.
No.
No.
He wants out.
For the record, yeah, he is most definitely going to lose.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but that's only...
It's just a matter whether it's historic or not.
Yeah. And that also, it stands on the fact that the people who they take these polls from actually go out and vote.
Mm.
So remember, folks, don't boo, vote.
Yeah.
So anyway, they have this interview with his attorney because they're talking about, you know, Trump is sort of overhauling his campaign. He kind of went on to a press conference and kind of sort of not really but tried to apologize, saying I've said some wrong things in the past. He doesn't make any specific, but he kind of, like, we know what he's talking about, but Trump is such a huge ass that he can't, you know, he's like a less charming version of the Fonz. You know, I wasn't correct.
Yeah, the first step to recovery is to admit you have a fault.
Yeah. And even he can't do that.
No.
But, so, you know, his attorney goes on CNN and they're talking about, you know, he's losing in the polls, and which, for the record, yeah, he is. As far as the polls, from what I've been told recently, even if he won the key battleground states at this point, he would still lose if the election was held today. So, you know, the reporter that, you know, he's doing the interview with says, look, it's he's like, look, polls are showing that Donald Trump is losing. And so his attorney basically enters internet history by going, says who? Says who? Polls? What polls? What polls are you talking about? What are those polls from? Who's doing them?
He just has no reaction to this.
And she, frankly, the person who's the anchor woman who's interviewing him is frankly just kind of
like, says who? All of them?
All of them?
Like 5 seconds of quiet out of him.
Yeah, just the most awkward five seconds of dead air you will ever see on television.
Yeah.
He's like, says who?
Yeah. Yeah, I think we can reproduce it here right now. So let's try to reproduce
here
that.
I'm going to listen to it, and I'm going to just perform it all again.
Yeah, because you really, it's just...
You say it's not a shake-up, but you guys are down. Says who? She stops. Says who? Most of them? All of them?
Yeah.
Says who? The polls.
What?
I just told you. Which polls? All of them. Okay. That's it.
That is it.
Yeah.
That's a man who has no answers.
Yeah.
No. Just
wants to find some crack.
Yeah. And here's Yeah, his campaign is fucked. It's just at this point, you know, is he just gonna, you know, he cannot admit to himself that he's wrong on this one, so he has to stick through to the end.
Yeah, it's like,
and the worst part is he's dragging everybody else in his campaign down with him.
Yeah. Like, and the problem is he's like the GOP's candidate now, so if he pulls out now, it would be worse.
Yeah, because then Mike Pence would be the freaking...
So...
And you do not want that. Well, actually, it wouldn't really matter, because even if Mike Pence ended up taking his place, they'd still lose. Because he is... he's damaged the GOP brand so badly at this point.
Yeah.
That the Republican Party is basically a dead man walking.
Yeah, there's like a respectable part of the GOP. Like, obviously, like the Bushes didn't attend the RNC, didn't do anything.
Yeah.
Like, the DNC actually had former presidents there.
Yeah.
RNC, none.
Nope.
Either of the Bushes were there.
None of the Bushes were there. McCain wasn't there. Romney wasn't there.
Obviously, had Ted Cruz go there, but not
to
pledge fealty to Trump.
Nope.
So just do your research.
Yeah. So, all right. So, moving on from there, PSN's having their flash sale.
Yep.
And let's take a look at what they got going.
They got a bunch of Final Fantasy games for $3.
Yeah.
Five, six, eight, nine. They got Bastion
on there for, I think, $3. I can't tell because I have it purchased already, so it doesn't show me the price.
Yeah, Final Fantasy 9, $2.99. Mega Man Legends 2, Final Fantasy 5.
Another World 20th Anniversary Edition for $1.50.
Yep.
Breath of Fire 4 is on sale.
Say Dragon's Dogma, Oddworld New and Tasty Edition.
Oh, that's definitely worth picking up. Divinity Original Sin.
Dark Cloud 2 is on there as well. It's on sale.
Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon,
yeah.
Which is actually $4.49. Earth Defense Force, Dark Cloud 2.
There's like three Earth Defense Force games on sale.
Dust and Legion Tale.
Yep.
Just buy that. You don't.
Yeah, just get it.
Just get that.
Yeah, that is a game that is definitely worth your time.
Yeah. Dragon Age Inquisition, the Game of the Year edition, is pretty cheap.
That's got all the DLC that goes with it.
Those are all real good. Luminous on the Vita, it's real good. Yeah. Don't get that.
Like,
Mega Man Legends 2.
Pretty big deal. A lot of really good stuff on sale.
Mm-hmm. A lot of really good older stuff that if you haven't had the chance to play yet.
Yeah. Pretty much all of the Oddworld games are on sale.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's the two on PS1. There's Munch's Odyssey and Stranger's Wrath.
Mm-hmm.
And the remake of the original.
Yeah.
PS4 and Vita.
Yeah. Power Stranger's Stone Wrath is really good.
Mm-hmm.
Stranger's Wrath is...
Yeah.
Yeah, hopefully we'll get that one remastered at some point.
Yeah. So
bunch
yeah,
Red Faction stuff.
Oh yeah. Red Faction
movies too, but if you
away from Armageddon, but
yeah. Red Faction Guerrilla is like just that is just one of the most entertaining games ever made.
Yeah.
If you're into shmups, Soldner X games are real good ones.
Yeah.
The Magic Circle, Phil. That one's on sale. $8.
Yeah. Not a bad game. Worth picking up. Got it.
Terraria on the PS4 is on sale. Wild Arms 1, 2, and 3.
I don't have 3.
Get Transistor for $5.
Yeah.
Velocity Ultra is also on sale for like $2.
Yeah.
It's another real good shooter. And you can get Yorby for 79 cents. Game that was originally sold for $20 at a permanent price drop down to $2.
You could get it for 79 cents, but don't.
No.
Yeah, there's a reason why this episodic game only has one episode.
You know, the funny thing about the Red Faction series is that what I love about it is it's a mainstream gaming franchise that's done really well, and yet it unabashedly uses the aesthetics of revolutionary socialism as a good thing.
Yeah.
That always just kills me.
Because
you guys know me, you guys know me, I'm the big scary socialist over here, and that just cracks me up. But, alright, so, PSN flash sale, got some good stuff, go get it.
Yeah. And Nintendo has a pretty decent sale on some summer sale stuff.
Yeah, go over there too.
Yeah, I picked up Human Resource Manager, which is the new game from the World of Goo and I forget what their more recent game is, but it's kind of a programming game.
Yeah.
Which is real weird, but it's pretty cool. I forget what else I picked up. Dr. Luigi. I want to pick up Super Mario 3D Land again. Because I played that when that came out, and I want to play it again.
That game was the Super Mario 3D Land, that was the one game on the 3DS that I actually liked using the 3D feature on.
Yeah, they actually designed the levels around that.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of where you're kind of breaking through the background or the foreground.
Yeah, it was actually really entertaining.
Yeah.
Yeah, I played.
Phil will never be able to experience that. No. But where is your god now, Phil?
We have free healthcare, so that.
God damn it!
Well, what's good for him is that there are a million other Mario games.
Yeah. All right. Well, okay. So, moving on from that. And yet another example of why you should never, ever, ever ask the internet to name your products.
or let the internet create their own products.
Yeah.
We'll talk about what happened, and then we'll look at the photos.
Okay, so over in New Zealand, McDonald's has a Build-A-Burger site where you can create, sort of go through all the various ingredients and stuff at McDonald's, put them together, and create your own hamburger. Mm-hmm. Give it your own name.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, you know, they're creating these what they call Create Your Taste kiosks that they're setting up at McDonald's all over New Zealand. So they set up a site where you can go and you can make your own burgers and then have it actually posted on the webs. Oh, God, this is already a bad idea.
I just saw the first one.
Yeah, and then it said, it quickly learned a lesson about the internet that most brands have figured out at this point. You should never, ever leave anything up to the online masses. So what did they come up with?
Some rather horrifying concoctions.
And some others that are actually pretty goddamn brilliant, I'll admit. Like the cheat meal.
Toddler body bag.
Yeah. So first,
my Angus.
Yeah. So what is the cheat meal? Well, it's basically a what the fuck is that thing? It looks like three or four patties with melted cheese and bacon in between all of them, which is. Yeah, I get it, cheat meal, because it's like you're cheating on your diet.
Yeah.
You know what the worst part is? I would totally order one of those. Because I eat like Elvis, I have no shame. And yet somehow I'm still not 300 pounds. Again, where is your god now? But, so people piled on grilled pineapple and guacamole on their burgers. Some of them were crude, some of them were weird, and of course, because of the internet, some of them were rather racist.
Yeah.
So you had the what on In-N-Out Burger in California they would call a Flying Dutchman, which is a burger patty and toppings between two things of lettuce.
Yeah.
But in this case, they called it the toddler body bag.
Yeah.
Lots and lots of Nazi propaganda and Harambe memes.
Mm-hmm.
Harambe, for those of you who don't remember, that was the gorilla that was sadly shot at that zoo because the parents were too stupid to watch out for their kids to not get into the gorilla section. Let's see. We got a lettuce with two beef patties between them. With what looks like the special sauce from the Big Mac called the Bigazi Chicken Witch.
Yeah. Scroll down, there's one called Girth.
Yeah. It's literally just seven patties piled on top of one another. And what's sad is...
NES.
Yeah. There's the quarter pound Myangus. which is a quarter pounder made with Angus beef and what looks like one of the eggs from the Egg McMuffin.
Yeah.
And I think some, like, guacamole stuff at the top.
Swiss cheese.
Yeah.
The rectal prolapse, which is, again, it's the...
God damn it, internet.
Yeah, they went to another article, some more.
Hmm.
It's one of the just the buns with cheese on it called the Sad European. Which, for people that don't know, popular sandwich in Europe is cheese on, like, one piece of bread, some butter. Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's called a, I think it's called a rare bit.
Hmm.
It's like a, yeah, and I think it's, there's also supposed to be like some, I think in Australia they do that, but add like Vegemite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's fucking Australia.
Yeah.
Like, that's their idea of like a sandwich or toast or whatever.
Yeah. Actually, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to go over and look at this and see if we can. I'm pretty sure we've already mentioned a few of these.
Bernie's socialist feast is just bun.
Yeah. Ha 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 ha. So funny. The girth, the Bernie's, yeah, it's just the bun.
Carbonator's just a big stack of buns.
I mentioned the rectal prolapse. I have no idea what that, like, I recognize the bottom, the thing there at the bottom is the egg from the Egg McMuffin, and I think some, is that some sausage or bacon?
It's like, I don't even know.
Is that like butter or something? Let's see. Oh, it's a bun with what looks like bacon and a couple pieces of tomato, and I think, like, it looks like some grape, like some cranberry sauce or something, and they call it the pussy sandwich.
Yeah. So not only could you see these, you know, horrifying creations on the website, you could go to the store and get them.
Oh yeah.
So, yeah.
You know, yeah,
there's Ron's Creamy Surprise.
Yeah.
Just a stack of special sauce.
Yeah. No tissues, which is just a bun with mayonnaise in between it.
Yeah.
Aha, masturbation joke.
It looks like there's sub bun.
Yeah, there's a big bun that's piled high with mushrooms, the grilled chicken.
Seems like everything.
Yeah, the eggs from the Egg McMuffin, bacon, two patties with cheese in between them, tomato, pickles,
ham
stuff, and it's called Thin Privilege. And then there's a thing with nothing, and it's called the Atheist Delight.
Just a greasy napkin.
And then there's a vegetarian example of what they would call the, well, the, I say vegetarian, the patty-less version, because I think there's some bacon in there, of what the In-N-Out would call the Flying Dutchman, and it's called the Pepe, after Pepe the Frog.
Yeah.
Ron's Creamy Surprise, it's nothing but...
special sauce.
Yeah. You know what the sad thing is? Mm. What's really, really sad?
It's like, I would probably order some of these.
Yeah, I would definitely order some of these. Because some of these actually don't look half bad.
Yeah.
Like the Benghazi chicken witch, I would totally get that.
Yeah, if and you the could toddler just order pack. It from the app with like that. Make it a lot easier than trying to explain it to them.
Yeah. You just have to bring the QR code. Yeah.
Yeah. On the one hand, this is just a massive embarrassment for McDonald's.
But on the other hand, it's also kind of brilliant.
Yeah. I would not be surprised to actually see some of these show up as regular menu items, granted under different names, but still.
Yeah.
Some of them are probably already on there, just like secret items.
Yeah. Sort of like what In-N-Out does.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Or Whataburger, another Five Guys, another one of those niche burger, regional burger chains.
Pretty much every chain should have secret stuff. They don't have
anything.
Yeah.
I know Taco Bell has a ton of different stuff that's not actually on their menu.
Yeah. Including meat. Uh-huh. Yeah. Social commentary. Yeah. Yeah, so moving on from that.
Yeah.
Because I'm liable to die if I keep looking. Oh, yeah, so the lovely 19-year-old actress Zendaya is mm-hmm. recently been cast as the Mary Jane in the new Spider-Man movie,
mm-hmm.
which is great because, you know, she's a reasonably good actress. She's attractive looking.
She's part of the Disney family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Easy and actor. It's, yeah, so, you know, and we're getting a new Spider-Man movie, so we can all forget about that last couple of abortions.
Yeah, The Amazing Spider-Man, which were not amazing at all.
No.
First one was okay.
Just okay. Yeah.
Just kind of okay.
So, for the most part, everybody were like, yeah, cool. This is awesome. But it's the internet.
Yeah, and of course they're going to be horrible and
terrible sexist. And racist. And
this one isn't white.
They're going to be talking about, you know, there's going to be uses of white genocide and, you know, what else? Virtue signaling and feminazi and political correctness and cultural Marxism and improper use of the word cuck.
Yeah.
Because the alt-right is a dick.
Yep.
And at some point we are going to have to talk about the alt-right a little bit on this show, because for better or worse, they have become a part of the modern political landscape, and you can't escape them.
Yeah.
But if you want to just for a recommendation, if you want to just find out a little bit what you need to know about the alt-right, just go on YouTube, look up H-Bomber Guy, who is a left-leaning individual who makes a lot of videos making fun of these assholes.
Mm.
And you'll quickly find out that most of the major figures in that particular movement are basically incompetent neckbeard asshats who blame all their problems on other people.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was one story I was considering for Asshole of the Week, but it needs to develop a little bit more.
Mm.
Yeah. We'll get back to that later.
Yeah.
In other Marvel news, the Guardians of the Galaxy people are joining up with the Avengers in Avengers Infinity War.
Yeah, that whole storyline kind of started with Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I was actually wondering what was going to be the Guardians of the Galaxy 2, and this isn't quite that, but...
Yeah, that's still, I think, next year.
Probably.
Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, this and movie's going to have everything in it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This is pretty much going to be the beginning of the end for the Marvel Cinematic.
Yeah, it's probably just going to go downhill.
People are joking there are going to be more superheroes than extras.
Yeah. Which is kind of what Marvel comics actually are.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so basically... If you're familiar with the Infinity War storyline, the Guardians of the Galaxy have to be there.
Yeah.
Because this is the point when Thanos manages to get a hold of the Infinity Gems and just causes a whole shit ton of awful problems.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're going to be seeing the gang from Guardians of the Galaxy again, which is good because I fucking love that movie.
Yeah. The question is, will we see Rocket Raccoon drunk again?
Will Rocket Raccoon be in the movie?
I don't know. I would hope so.
Well, then, yes, you will.
Because, yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of part of his whole... And you know what? Out of all the characters that were in Guardians of the Galaxy, he seems to have been the one that really sort of broke through, who was a real breakthrough.
Yeah. Not bad for a CG raccoon.
Yeah. And I remember when the trailer for that movie first came out and nobody knew what to make of it.
Yeah, we're like, it's like the music was, you know, like all weird. This old stuff, and then it's like we're seeing raccoons and like a tree walking around. I'm like, what the hell am I
It was being directed by like a sort of a more niche sort of indie movie director who made most of his work over at Troma.
Troma director, that's...
Yeah. James Gunn.
Yeah.
And then it came out, and it was awesome.
Yeah, it was awesome. Fucking set some box office records.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's happening.
Yeah, good stuff.
Oh, God, we all know eventually that the Marvel Cinematic Universe train is eventually going to run out of steam at some point.
It will.
But it seems like for so far they've somehow managed to keep it going.
Yeah, if they actually managed to make Ant-Man good, so
yeah,
there is something right over there.
Yeah,
it's going to be around the time that the contracts start expiring for some of these actors.
Yeah.
And they have to
either that
figure
or
out how to do Tony Stark without Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah. Either that or they get to the point in Marvel chronology where they end up in the early 90s.
Yeah.
AKA the Liefeld era.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm just going to end on that because I want you to just stew in your own terror for a little while.
Do not want.
All right, so... following up from last week's Let's Weekend when we talked about the 20th anniversary, the 25th anniversary of Metallica's The Black Album, mm-hmm. also known as Metallica's Metallica. By Metallica.
Yeah.
We got a new single from them recently.
Yep.
And it actually precedes a double album that's coming out called,
Hardwired to Self-Destruct.
Wow, that is... weirdly self-descriptive and self-aware. The fucking album cover is a...
Yeah, it's definitely striking, isn't it? Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, reminds me, these guys are all in their 50s.
Yeah.
So yeah.
It's real funny.
It's also really funny because the promo photo that they showed is like probably one of the worst Photoshops I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, those proportions are not right at all.
No.
These guys are in their 50s and they're pretty wealthy.
Yeah.
They don't have really anything to be angry about anymore.
No.
Yeah. Well, on the other hand, the thrash is back.
Yeah, the thrash is back.
Yeah.
You know, this is, you know, I mean, they kind of sort of made a sort of comeback to that with Death Magnetic, but, yeah, it's definitely better.
Yeah, it's much better than Death Magnetic. I also, because I'm a nerd, I opened the song in Audacity and had a look at the waveform.
Uh-huh.
Yes, it's still brick walled, but at least there's some dynamic range in there.
So yeah.
It's 6 dB instead of 3.
Yeah. Also, no tin drums.
No tin drums. Drums, actually, I have to give Lars credit for that. He's going kind of back to a more Master of Puppets style of drum sound, which I definitely approve of.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm looking forward to this. Two CDs, well, three if you get the deluxe edition.
Which has 14 songs on that.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be 80 minutes, roughly, split across two CDs. They probably could have crammed it into one, but what the hell.
Mm-hmm. So you have to let's hope this is going to be sort of a good return to form for them, because other than that movie that they made, what was it called? Not the documentary, the concert movie.
So I remember the name. It's also the name of one of their songs. I just can't remember which one.
Yeah. Other than that, their recent releases have been sort of a long string of embarrassments. Yeah.
Through the Never.
Yeah. Through the Never, that's right. Which is actually pretty good, by the way.
Yeah.
Because up to this point, they had Saint Anger, which was...
Ow.
Yeah, I mean, as Phil has said, it took him a while, but he finally understands it now.
Yeah. I understand it. I don't particularly like it that much, but I understand why it had to happen.
And then we had Death Magnetic, which was, you know, better than Saint Anger, but still kind of...
Yeah, mixed by somebody who was deaf, apparently.
Yeah. And then they had Lulu.
Yeah, and in between there, they also had an EP called Beyond Magnetic, which I picked up recently. And that was actually kind of better than Death Magnetic, I would say.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, it's like there is musical ability there. There's talent. I'm not entirely sure what the hell happened with Lulu. Guess, you know, they wanted to work with Lou Reed before he died, so they did.
Yeah, that album is just so fucking weird.
Yeah, I'm not going to say it's bad. It's just
It's not bad. It's very, I think, really experimental. And for what it is, it's surprisingly intelligent. And,
yeah,
you know, I like it for that. But it's just so out of fucking left field.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, Death Magnetic, and then this shows up. What?
Spoken word with metal.
Yeah. I think it's to be fair, like for this particular album, they kind of kept a rap on it for, you know, a good amount of time, and they kind of said they were kind of working on new material. Kirk had mentioned, yeah, they were actually pretty pleased with what was going on.
Yeah,
but
the truth of the matter is, they didn't really have to worry because that thing was already going to sell millions.
Yeah, it would. But it would help if it was good.
Yeah, it would help if it was actually good. And Lars, of course, already had his history. He doesn't really trust the internet all that much.
No. But now they're embracing it and, you know, putting it out themselves.
Yeah. So
that's how you work with the internet. You just work with the internet.
Yeah. All right. Well, So, going on from there, just real quick, we want to point out, because Pat isn't here with us tonight, he's doing tournament stuff.
Yep.
But he did want us to remind everybody, the American Civil Liberties Union has a program where they give out and mail you free versions of the United States Constitution. And if you're a person who wants to, if you're one of those person who wants to, you know, have a good information where you can actually have the Constitution in your pocket. You can take it out, go through it, pick out parts that, you know, because, like, there's a lot of people who claim that they want to defend the Constitution and believe in the Constitution, and yet they're completely full of shit.
Yeah.
And this way you can actually point it out to them in public.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah, it is.
So, yeah, we've got the link to it, and if you want to, if you want to go there and get yourself a copy of the Constitution, go ahead and get it. And this is specifically from the American Civil Liberties Union. It's annotated by them. They are one of the few organizations in the United States that I trust completely, and if this is one of those things you want, just go ahead and get it, because you want to know this stuff.
Yeah. It's not going to cost you anything.
Nope, it's not going to cost you a damn thing. You don't even have to pay for the shipping. They do that too.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's pocket size. You can just sort of carry it around with you.
Hmm.
You know, if you want to recite it like Mao's Little Red Book, go ahead. I'm not going to stop you, even though that's kind of weird. although I'm sure that there are some Republicans who totally do that.
Probably.
But, get your copy while you can.
Yeah.
Because I'm pretty sure that this is finite, that they're eventually going to stop. They're going to either, I guess they're going to run out eventually in the next couple of months. So you'll want to go ahead and get yours while you can.
Yeah.
All right. So, all right. So, moving on from that, we're going to talk a little bit about our penultimate topic of the night. So if you've been paying attention to the gaming circles on the internet, there's a certain game that recently got greenlit on Steam.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Metroidvania-style third-person shooter with lots of traps and enemies. It's very unforgiving. It's not unfair. It's not unfair, but it will punish you if you don't pay attention.
Yeah.
And now you're thinking, well, you know, it's kind of like a Dark Souls kind of shooter.
Yeah. sounds good.
Of sci-fi version. And you're like, wow, that's sounds awesome. I'm surprised they haven't made those yet. No, seriously, I'm really surprised they haven't made those yet.
Well, here's one.
So you're wondering, okay, well, that sounds awesome. What else we got? Oh, sorry. That was my plug for my microphone suddenly went haywire.
Yeah.
We can edit that out, can't we?
Probably.
Okay. Yeah, probably. Maybe, if I feel like it. But, yeah, so you're thinking, oh, yeah, so what else is there? Well, there's the game is called Haiti, and the character you play is Haiti, a sexy robot woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I do mean that in just all of the perhaps uncomfortable ways I mean it.
Yeah,
it's like a 90s CG television show kind of model.
Yeah, it kind of does look like that.
Like basically, reboot. Yeah. So who here plays Warframe?
I played it. Chris has played it.
Yeah, so you know some of the quote-unquote female characters in that game?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's kind of like this.
Mm-hmm.
Except this particular robot has human features. Not on the face. The face is completely blank.
Yeah.
In fact, from it looks like from the torso up, everything is mechanical.
Yeah.
But she has very human legs, thighs, and just the most glorious ass you've ever seen. And this game is pretty just, it is obsessed with making sure that you notice it.
It's real zoomed in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like,
really...
it's like, yes, game, I agree, but.
It's like the character model takes up the left third of the screen.
Yeah.
And I am completely okay with that. I think there was someone, the thing I linked to here probably describes it better than anyone else, says, Haiti is a great puzzler hidden in the mighty ass cheeks of a robot. So
that's a good way to describe it.
Yeah, so there's a couple this is one of those games that I think kind of falls into the Team Ninja DOA / Ninja Gaiden school.
Yeah.
In that it's this really well engineered game underneath some
layer of sexiness.
Yeah. And just for the record, I'm just going to go ahead and say it, because every site I've gone on there's been that one asshole in the comment is like, oh man, the SJWs and the feminazis are going to hate this, and I'm like, oh no, Anina Sarkeesian might make a video. How terrible.
Yeah.
No, stop, like, please, don't.
If the developer of this game was okay enough to make his character that way, probably okay with the reaction of people.
Yeah.
Because he is on the internet, he's probably well aware of how people would react.
Yeah. So yeah, it's on Steam Greenlight. Go ahead and give it a shot if you want. By all accounts, it's actually really solid. And hey, if you enjoy a nice big slice of robot ass, well,
yeah,
just sit back and enjoy.
Yeah,
there is plenty of it. All right. Well,
so you went to the movies.
Yes, I went to the movies this week. Specifically, I went Thursday. And I went to my local house of cinemas, and I went and saw the now infamous CGI animated parody film Sausage Party. One of those Jonah – it's a Jonah Hill / Seth Rogen joint.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's going to have all the regular players, including James Franco. Yes, of course, he's in this somewhere.
Yeah.
Edward Norton is also in here, too. And you would never know it because he's actually really good.
Yeah.
I'm not going to spoil who it is, but you'll find out at the end of the film. So, basically, the essential conceit of this movie is that food is alive.
Yeah.
It's alive. And I don't mean that, like, in the sense that, you know, a hamburger you once was a cow.
Yeah.
I mean that they have eyes and mouths, and they talk and walk and have weird...
The
stringy,
Toy Story of the grocery store.
That isn't Food Fight.
Hmm.
And so, you know, it opens up with a nice little musical number. And basically they're, you know, they're all food. They live in the grocery store. And what they want to do is they want to be, as they say, chosen by the gods to enter the great beyond. And by gods, of course, they mean humans.
Yeah.
And so there's like, that's all they want to do is like, yes, we want to be picked and taken and, you know, enter eternity. But if you've seen the trailers, you already know what enter eternity means in this movie. You get eaten.
Yeah.
Now, I will say that to a certain extent, the trailers kind of do this movie a disservice, but they also admittedly have to do it because, there's a lot more going on in this movie underneath the surface than it would originally put on.
Yeah.
Sort of like, really kind of sort of like what the Lego movie does. What this movie basically does is it takes all of those sort of the conceits of many Pixar movies, you know, like Toy Story or, you know, Cars or any of those movies where they take inanimate objects and put human.
Yeah, where they anthropomorphize all of it.
And give them human, you know, wants and emotions and all that stuff. And then they basically show you the terrifying reality of what such a thing would mean.
Yeah.
Because if you've ever noticed, with the exception of Toy Story, movies like Cars and Planes, there are usually not very many humans around.
No.
But even in Toy Story, humans are fairly insignificant.
Yeah.
With a couple of possible examples of that not being the case. But in this case, what happens is they're all getting picked, and you know, it's like, yay, we get picked up by this particular woman, and she's you know, this woman. And once again, one of the things about especially the female characters in this game, in this movie, specifically the mom characters, is they have that, they sort of make fun of how the mom characters in Pixar films tend to be uncomfortably sexualized and yet still somehow have that weird sort of uncanny valley thing going with them.
Yeah.
Like that's like one of the if you've ever, you've seen the previews, right? The trailers.
Yeah.
Okay, so you know the woman who picks up all the food. Yeah, in the movie her name is Camel Toe. Well, actually it's Camille Toe.
Yeah,
because she's got a serious camel toe going on.
Yeah.
So what happens is in this movie is that the main character is named Frank. He's the sausage, and of course he wants to hook up with Brenda, who's the bun. And they get picked up, and what happens is as they're in the cart, the woman picks out, she gets a jar of honey mustard. Now, the thing is, this jar of honey mustard was actually returned from a previous person, but since it was still good, it was put back up on the shelf. So this particular jar of honey mustard actually saw what goes on the other side. And as you would expect, he's basically shell-shocked and PTSD addles, and then basically kills himself. And some shit happens. Some of the food accidentally falls out of the cart, and you know, you see that, you know, including Brenda and Frank, and you know, that sort of kind of it, they sort of make it look like that scene from Saving Private Ryan, you know, the storming the beach at Normandy.
Yeah,
it's like that. So other than Frank, Brenda, there's another dude who, there's a couple other people who fell out. There's, one of them who is a douche, literally a douche. And he sounds like one of those... He basically sounds like what you would expect a douche to sound like. A gym brah.
Yeah.
Let's go, brah! You want to go, brah? And he actually starts juicing up. And by juicing up, I mean he basically finds various other juices and liquids and basically sucks the liquid right out of them. Including one part in the beginning where he finds a half-dead grape juice box with that's leaking, and it's specifically leaking from out of its crotch. So basically the douche sucks the juice right out of him. And yes, it looks exactly how you imagine it.
Who is this movie for?
Like Seth Rogen movies.
Yeah. For the record, this movie's done really well at the box office. It's made like triple its budget back. So
it sounds like ridiculous enough that I would really want to watch it.
So there's some other characters. One of them is named Sammy Bagels Jr., who is a bagel. And the other is a character named Kareem Abdul Lavash, who is a lavash. Guess what they fight over? In fact, the first thing you see them is fighting for space on a shelf. Because social commentary.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the Sammy Bagels Jr., he just wants to get back to his homeland. The Lavash talks about how, you know, he's awaiting 72 extra virgin olive oil bottles in paradise. So these group of weirdos all get together. Eventually they meet this Mexican taco voiced by Selma Hayek named Teresa. And because she's a taco, she's also a lesbian. And she's really into Brenda the Bun. And so eventually what happens is I talked about how those particular foods fell out of the cart. Not all of the sausages that were in the cart actually fell out. Frank was the only one that did. There's a bunch of other sausages that are left that still make it to Camille's house. And she – and that – you've probably seen that part in the previews too. They get out of the bag. They – shake around. For those of you who are wondering, the short stubby sausage is actually voiced by Michael Cera. And he actually does really well. And yeah, so all that horrible shit that you see happen in the preview, that's where it happens. So basically what happens is Frank sort of starts to realize that the whole story they've been told about eternity and everything is actually bullshit. And what he does is he comes across a group of foods called the imperishables. You know, stuff like the ones that don't actually age. So amongst them, there is one of them that's a thing of whiskey named Firewater, who is an American Indian stereotype. There's one that's called a box of Mr. Grits. Yeah, he's the black guy. And then there's one named Twink, who's a Twinkie.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll let you fill in the blanks there. And so basically what they do is they reveal what actually happened. The reason they came up with this whole – and yes, it was the Imperishables that came up with the whole story, because up to that point, they tell them that up to that point, all the food basically lived in terror of what was going to happen to them when they were picked up. So they came up with it as a way to just sort of calm down all of the food and to at least give them hope and at least some semblance of, you know, of order. But as Firewater himself explains, what happened is that they started to take the words that they created and started twisting it to weird and bizarre ways until a point when the bottles of sauerkraut went full Nazi and decided they wanted to exterminate all of the juice.
Yeah, because that never happens with anything, really.
No.
No.
So, eventually, I don't want to spoil a whole lot because, honestly, a lot of this movie has probably been spoiled for a lot of people already if they've been looking on the internet. So I'm just going to go ahead and say, eventually, yeah, they do find out the truth. They reveal the truth to the people in the supermarket. They rise up and overthrow their evil human overlords. And then when they all realize that, you know, there is no great beyond, that there's only the here and now, they all decide, let's get down and fuck. So for the next 5 minutes, well, 3.5 minutes, you see
fuck montage.
A giant food-related fuck montage. And it's basically every concept you can think of. Just, you know, Teresa gets to go down on Brenda. The sauerkraut Hitler gets fucked in the ass by one of the juice. And he goes, nine, 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 during it.
Oh, my God.
And then there's another twist that comes in the end that I'm not going to spoil. But, yeah, that's basically Sausage Party.
It sounds just
You have
amazing,
to see this
actually.
Movie. I highly recommend it.
Yeah.
It is hysterically funny. And, you know, it's got, you know, your average sort of what jokes you would expect from a Seth Rogen movie. So lots of drug humor and scatological humor and sex humor.
Yeah.
But there's a lot more going on. It's got layers to it.
Yeah.
It actually ends up being a surprisingly intelligent commentary on the nature of organized religion.
Yeah.
And not in just ways you would expect. It's surprisingly funny in parts.
Yeah.
And the humor isn't, like I said, the humor isn't all just, you know, your average, easy, you know, drug and shit jokes. It's actually, there's a lot of, like, conceptual humor going on.
Yeah.
It's one of those movies, I've described it the best I can without ruining too much, but it's one of those movies you have to go see. It's basically a surprisingly intelligent commentary on organized religion that just so happens to be about a bunch of talking food items that make up racial stereotypes.
Yeah.
So, you know, the racial stuff, you could look at it as sort of just attempts at a cheap laugh, or you could say that it's a commentary on the way that some Pixar movies aren't always that
Must
good
be.
At addressing those types of issues.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, the bagel and the lavash eventually make up and become lovers. So there's even like a short, really blink and you miss it close-up of the lavash's clenching asshole. So,
okay.
Yeah, that was one of the things that they had to sort of redo in order to get the rating down to an R.
Yeah.
So,
as always, the unrated Blu-ray.
Yeah, always the unrated Blu-ray. That movie is going to sell like gangbusters. So, yeah, that was Sausage Party. Go see it. You know, I only had to spend $7.50, so.
Cool.
All right, then. So, I do believe we have a show.
Yeah, we do.
God damn, that is the, just what to end on, man.
Yeah, it's just, it doesn't get better than that.
Nope.
So.
So, I have, of course, been your host with the most, Brandon Perkins, and for Filippo D'Onofrio and a snoring Chris Logie, I would like to say, night, get some sleep out there, folks.